Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Galen Godbey, your host this evening. Tonight we'll be talking about education and entrepreneurship with our guests, Professor Mike Kreise of Penn State Lehigh Valley and a student from Parkland High School, Ariman Khandelwal. Good evening, Mike. Good evening, Ariman. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Again, our topics this evening are education and entrepreneurship. Let me start by asking, are our schools and colleges preparing people for an economy that no longer exists? Are the qualities that our educational institutions seek to develop consistent with a future in which artificial intelligence, robots, data mining and analytics, the quote-unquote Internet of Things, and globalized flows of knowledge, people, and money constantly churn labor markets, politics, and education? We are indeed entering the age of accelerations. Are the authority relationships, teaching and learning strategies, and grading systems we use actually retarding creativity, initiative, and the ability to inspire trust, all crucial qualities for the road ahead in our students? Add on climate change, demographic shifts, increasing numbers of fragile governments, and greater international and intercultural engagements and sometimes conflicts, and the need to rethink education for what Tom Friedman of the New York Times calls the age of acceleration seems inescapable. This evening, our two guests, Mike Kreise, Professor Mike Kreise of Penn State Lehigh Valley's Business Department, and 16-year-old Ariman Khandelwal, a rising senior at Parkland High School, will help us explore these issues. Mike and Ariman already have a working relationship that is accelerated through the Penn State Launchbox program. Mike, although Launchbox has been mentioned on Lehigh Valley Discourse, I think several times before, remind the listeners about Penn State's initiative. What are its goals? How's it funded? Who's it for? Any results to date?
Well, Galen, a lot of what you just stated in the opening, President Barron recognized that Penn State has to be a change leader. And 3 years ago, he came up with Invent Penn State. And he took $30 million and set it aside for faculty, staff, and students to begin exploring the things you said in your opening statement. You know, how do we get students to cross disciplines? How do we become more inventive and creative? And he put out grant requests to the 21 campuses. And Penn State Lehigh Valley was one of the first six grant recipients to establish an off-campus community-facing accelerator, which we now call Lehigh Valley Launchbox, which is 2.5 years old. And Ariman was one of our first portfolio grant recipients, and we'll get into that a little more. But since that time, we have funded 32 portfolio projects.
Terrific.
Only seven of which are Penn State faculty or staff or student related, and the rest are out in the community. We have a good partner with City Center and J.B. Riley, who has given us space in Velocity, which we use quite a lot, and that's very encouraging. Probably one of the things that we are most proud of is our Teen Entrepreneurship Challenge. Last year, we had 14 students in that because, you know, and these were targeting rising juniors and seniors, trying to instill in them this creative entrepreneurial way of thinking that you described up front. And this year, it's even going to be better. It's ongoing, and this year we partnered with Perky Oman Prep School, who has a very advanced innovation center, and we have 20 students this year, and six of them are from Building 21 in Allentown, which is an innovative part of the Allentown High School, and we're very happy to be associated with them, and through the Bosch Rexroth grant, we've been able to offer a few scholarships this year. But this is the important thing. You know, Ariman is really an exceptional student and an exceptional young man in so many ways. But now we're able to focus in Allentown and make these types of entrepreneurial opportunities available to other students, and we're very proud of that.
It sounds like with good reason. Well, we've heard you describe Ahriman. Let's hear from Ahriman. Ahriman, how did you hear about this program and what attracted you to it?
So I actually heard about Mike before I heard about Launchbox.
Mike's reputation precedes him.
we spoke together at a youth leadership forum in 2015, and Mike was speaking about a project he had just done with his students in Peru. And I had been thinking a lot about developing countries and what kind of help I could provide to them. So I reached out to Mike, just asking him how he completed his project. And he directed me to Lehigh Valley's new incubator program, which was Lehigh Valley Launchbox. Mm-hmm. And so I submitted a grant proposal to Lehigh Valley Launchbox, and I was accepted for that. And I actually get to Greater, which is my project for healthcare in developing countries, was actually fully funded by Lehigh Valley Launchbox.
What was the title of the project?
Get to Greater.
Get to Greater. Okay. Yep. Okay. It's sort of like from good to great.
Yep.
Okay.
Just like that.
All right. Well, so you got a grant for your project. Now, when you were applying for this, did you have any help from your parents or your friends or anybody at school, or did you do this pretty much on your own?
Yeah, there was a lot of different factors to it. So this entire idea was kind of inspired by me taking a human geography course at my school, and that course is all about demographics and how societies change over time. And one thing that was really stressed in that is how developing and developed countries can work together to create societal progress for both. And so that idea was really something that was interesting to me and something I wanted to be able to implement. And so that's where the base idea for this all came about. And then there was the grant writing proposal was written by me. And then from there, it's been really a collaborative effort to actually get this project together.
Yeah, that just sounds terrific. But now, perhaps I can answer the question myself with a name like Ahriman Khandelwal. you picked India because...
Yeah, it was definitely close to my heart.
There's a family history in India.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
I was actually born in India, and we moved when I was around one.
And what part of India?
From central India. The state is Maharashtra.
Yes.
I was born in Nagpur,
Nagpur.
Yes.
Oh, the orange city.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wonderful. It's a lovely place.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Okay. Okay, and so... congratulations on getting the grant. Take some time now and tell us about your project. Goals, successes, stumbles. I assume there are some stumbles.
There are quite a few.
And outcomes.
So it all kind of started in 2014. We took a trip to India, and we went to a bit of a different place than we normally do, which we usually just go to visit family. So we went to a more rural area of India in an area called Chikaldara. And so... There, I remember one incident was particularly striking to me, and then the area is known for having a lot of corn. So mm-hmm. A lot of roadside stalls, and they almost all sell corn.
Now, forgive me, when you say corn, do you mean corn as Americans think of corn, or are you meaning corn as the way the English, for example, would say? In other words, what we call... You know, is it? I mean, are you talking about
corn
on the cob?
Like corn on the cob.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, because sometimes that term gets used generically with grains and so on. Okay.
Yeah. So, so there was a lot of places that sold corn, and you know, it's like a delicacy of the area. So naturally, we tried a lot of it, and so one thing I never really thought of where that corn would come from, and then one of the days I remember I saw. A little boy, maybe no more than 10 years of age, and he was carrying like a sack of corn, maybe twice his size.
Yeah,
and that was really like a moment that I still remember to this day as kind of an impetus for me thinking that something needs to change, that this can't continue like the way it's going like right now. And so I reached out to some of my family who had worked in the area as doctors. Mm-hmm. And they told me of an organization called the Mahan Trust mm-hmm. that actually has developed in a kind of innovative way to treat so many people with such a few number of doctors. So what the Mahan Trust does is they have a very limited number of doctors. They only have maybe max 10 to 15 actually trained doctors who serve an area with a population of over 200,000.
Huge number, I'm sure, yes.
Yeah. And so what they've done is they've trained village health workers. And these are people in villages that the villages are comfortable in speaking with. And they're often not fully educated. Usually they're on average have a fourth grade education. But they've trained them to take some basic measurements and record this information, then get this information to a hospital where doctors can record it and review it and then send back treatments or diagnoses if necessary. And so this has allowed them to treat far more people than they could ever have done just by themselves with just their one hospital. And so now the one issue with this is, the people in the area are not used to modern medicine.
Yes.
And so they're
suspicious.
Yeah, there's a lot of superstition, and there's a growing trade in witch doctors and who claim to be able to do a lot of things that aren't actually possible.
And India's also had a problem with medical students who go to school for a year and then quit and hang out a shingle in the village and say, I'm a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of people who aren't qualified to be doing what they're saying they're doing. And so it's only like exacerbated the fear of local people of actual proper medicine.
Right.
So there, that's the first issue. And the second issue is that this system, although it's very innovative and allows them to reach out to a lot of people, it takes a lot of time in between when the health worker has to take this data, give it to the hospital, and the hospital has to give it back.
Well, and how is that process? What are the logistics of that process? Because most villages in India still don't have electricity.
Yeah, it's
is that a manual process where they're physically carrying records to the hospital?
Okay. Yeah, so there's someone writes down all this information or circles information. It's not usually generally writing, and then someone will come once a week or once every 2 days to come take that. And they'll physically transport it to the hospital.
Okay.
The doctors will then go through all of those papers one by one, read out each one, go through whatever data seems to be off or not normal. And then, again, they'll manually go to the village, try to find that person that they were referring to, and then treat that person. Mm-hmm. So this process can take anywhere from
weeks.
2 weeks to like 2 months.
Yeah.
And often for things like malnutrition and hypertension, that
somebody
2 weeks
could die.
To a month is far too long.
Yeah.
And so what I saw there, I'm a teenager. I do everything on my phone. I've had a computer since I was born. And so for me, the solution here was clearly technology. And so here I was with my idealistic view of giving technology to everyone, but I was still just a teenager. I had no idea where I was going with this, how to make this a reality.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew is I had a passion and I had an idea that I wanted to somehow get across. So I reached out to anyone I could, anyone who had talked to me about basically how to make this from where it was an idea to reality.
Yes.
And so I developed, using a third-party software, a basic prototype of how I thought this app could look that would be able to take in some data and then spit out a treatment or diagnosis plan. And it was a very, very basic at that time. It took in just a very few basic fields, and it didn't actually return anything at all. It just took in the data. And so I bought a tablet, and I sent this to the organization in India.
Mm-hmm.
And then I set up a correspondence with them on how they think this could possibly work in their system, what kind of pitfalls they saw, and what else basically would be able to happen there. And so here I realized that India is very far away from the United States and therefore is in a different time zone. And so I could only talk to them for a few hours, either late at night or a few hours
early
in the morning.
Early in the morning, yeah.
And this is in an area where there is electricity for maybe 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, 10 and a half hour time difference.
Yeah, 10 and a half hours, yeah.
Right.
And there's usually not electricity, which means there's an even smaller percentage of that time is with internet or with any kind of connectivity measure. So we would be able to speak for maybe a few minutes a day at best on a good day. So this is where I was stuck. I was very lost. I was pretty confused. But this is where really Launchbox came in and really helped me take this project to a reality. So with the Launchbox grant, I was able to hire a team of developers to make this app into what I actually envisioned it to be. I was able to get the reach and the kind of legitimacy that was necessary to inspire more partners to join me and to make it a more collaborative effort. And then with this base, I was re-inspired almost. And I was able to then go on. I reestablished communication. I made it more direct. I looked for a different kind of way to communicate. And we found that we started talking on WhatsApp, and we made it a much more direct kind of communication. And so with that Launchbox funding and with the Launchbox support, I was able to then take that project and actually make it a reality. And then so a few months later, in actually November of last year, I went to India to the hospital to test out the completed app. And, you know, again, there, it was like that same process all over again. I went there thinking I knew what was happening, what was going on. It was going to be great. And I went there, and the reality is just always so different from anything I could have envisioned.
Yes. Yes.
It was a new experience completely. And so I went there, and I was just awestruck by the dedication and passion of all the doctors and workers.
It's remarkable.
It was amazing. Like, as doctors, they could be making far more money in the city. They could have their own.
Or in the United States.
Yeah, or in the United States, or basically anywhere. As doctors, they're the highest qualified. They've gone to school for so many years, and they know everything. And so from there, I was amazed by their dedication, especially the director, who I had been speaking with a lot in person. He and his wife have actually not been to a movie in 18 years. And wow. And he wakes up at 4 a.m. in the morning, goes to work, sleeps very late.
It's his whole life.
And so that improved my passion to the next level. And so from there, we made some edits after that entire visit. And then now that's how Get to Greater is where it is now, where it's actually successful in the goal that it was intended to create.
You know, a lot of people think, you know, wow, the whole world is connected now, and say, wow, look at Facebook. They've got, you know, 1.5 billion people involved with Facebook and so on. And that's impressive. And then you remember, oh, gee, there are 7.3 billion people in the world who are not on Facebook.
Yeah.
India's computer penetration, household penetration, is not even 20%.
Nope, not even close.
And so we're at the very beginning. If you think that we've got tremendous interconnectivity and so on, we're just, with some nations, we're really just starting in any event. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking with Professor Mike Kreiza of Penn State and Ariman Khandelwal, a student at Parkland School District, about education and innovation. I'm Galen Godby. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
WDIY is proud to partner with the 9th Annual Maiden Creek Old Time Music Festival, July 9th, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Mayor's Grove in Blandin, PA. The master instructors for this year are Hunter Walker, Jane Rothfield, and Joan Newberry. The festival offers multi-level classes in all of the old-time instruments, as well as vocals and flatfoot dancing. Food on the premises and concerts throughout the day, finishing with an evening show featuring all of the teachers. For more information, mcotmf.org, 610-916-1285.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening, talking to Professor Mike Kreiza of Penn State Lehigh Valley, and Ariman Khandelwal, a rising senior at Parkland High School, about education and entrepreneurship. And in particular, we're talking about a project that Ariman had funded through the Penn State Launchbox Innovation Program. He's been telling us a good bit about the project that he's been doing with medical professionals in India. And let's return to his description of that project. And if you can, Ariman, tell us essentially where you are in this process, how you would know success if you saw it, okay, and what thoughts you have for the future of this project.
Yeah, definitely. So right now, the app takes in blood pressure and malnutrition information, so it can help in treating hypertension and malnutrition, which are the most prevalent things that happen in that area, and also are the things that require the quickest response time. So we went for whatever would have the most impact first. And in the future, we hope to take this model that we've kind of piloted in this area of India and take it to other places across the globe where these same problems exist, which are very similar across developing countries, from anywhere from Africa to Asia, even in South America. And so I hope to actually take this model and then replicate it in as many places as I can to kind of ensure their greatest success.
Have you thought about UNESCO in this regard? The United Nations, agency which really deals with all kinds of, medical and health-related issues?
Yeah, so I actually do hope to take this to the UN in the future. And that's especially something that Launchbox has been able to help me with the connections necessary to make that possible, and especially the legitimacy necessary to make that possible. And I think the UN is definitely should be my next step, and yeah, that's where I'm going to go with it in the future.
Terrific. It's just really exciting.
Go ahead, Mike. You're a firm believer, as I am, in the value of networks. And I think one of the things that the Lehigh Valley Launchbox, in addition to funding 32 portfolio companies, has really expanded the network of Penn State, Lehigh Valley, our students, our faculty, and even more so into community, whether it be increased internships with major companies for our students, and then job opportunities after graduation. But more specifically to what Ariam's doing is we just funded another student in our recent grant round of portfolio funding, Neil Deshnook, who is a 14-year-old student at Moravian and also has developed an app that, again, addresses plant and skin diseases. And just like Ariaman, he is now at MIT's entrepreneurship camp this summer, where Ariaman went last year. But another portfolio company we funded, Raj, he has connections with the World Bank and the UN. And when we were able to get them all three together later in the month of July, we want to explore that network. So as Ariaman says, Launchbox gives legitimacy, especially to a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. Not that they need to be legitimized. I mean, this guy is an amazing young man in so many ways.
Winning, we never questioned your legitimacy.
winning oratorical contests and things. But it's such a delight to work with these young, bright individuals. And again, last year Ariaman came in and spoke to our entrepreneurship camp, and it's very nice to have, and I think he was younger than half the students that were there, but he just got up and, was an entrepreneurial rock star and telling them and encouraging. So we hope to hold these two young men up as examples to other high school students to get involved and get on the stick early in this area.
And I think that's terrific, Mike, and very exciting. And they're classic, examples of the fact that you don't have to have a high school diploma, let alone a college degree, to be a successful entrepreneur. Age is not really relevant. The question is, do you have a good idea, and are you prepared to work hard to make it, to make it happen?
Yeah, exactly. The thing that impressed me most about these two young students is their passion to be philanthropic in what they're doing.
Sure.
They're not doing this for for gain. It's a give back. So I don't know if it's the way they're raised, their family, but somebody gave these two young men big hearts that could have a big influence in helping people around the world.
Yep, exactly right. Well, and Mike, going back to Launchbox, I think one of the things that's really valuable about what you guys are doing, this isn't a Penn State program only for Penn Staters. The critical question for the Lehigh Valley's future development is, can we develop a valley-wide culture of entrepreneurship and innovation. And that has to include our elementary and secondary schools. It has to include our colleges, but it has to go far beyond that. And so, you know, the idea of being able to get people involved, you know, of different ages from different parts of the community, as well as Penn State students, I think is really, really important for the long run future of our region. So let's go back to my introductory remarks for a moment. As I listen, Ahriman, to your description of the project and its potential, you know, for being helpful on a global basis, particularly in developing countries. And we should not forget that it's the developing countries where world population is growing.
Yeah.
Okay. Women in Niger have an average of 7 children. Okay, and so those are the countries that, you know, need help in many, many ways, and their future really has implications for our future. But, you know, if we go back to your description of your project and go back to some of the characteristics of innovative people and cultures, let's think about how your project, you know, matches up with some of those. So in other words, first of all, your project is international, mm-hmm. okay? You started with India, but you hope to take it to UNESCO or some other global entity to expand its application, right? It's certainly intercultural. It's technologically mediated, okay? You have to be able to communicate with people in those countries, and you're doing that. It's service leadership. And service leadership is really what Mike was just talking about. Young people such as yourselves, you want to do something. You want to do something to help people. You recognize you're going to be living in this world for perhaps 80 or 90 years. You want it to be the best world it can be. You're trying to make a contribution. You're trying to serve others. The simple reality is by serving others, you're going to make yourselves more attractive people, and you'll probably do well mm-hmm. by doing good.
Yeah.
But that's great, and more power to you. But the idea of service leadership is really important. Innovation, of course, you know, this is an example of innovation. Initiative, having an idea is wonderful, but having the idea and being willing to go through the fog and the fumbling and the setbacks that are just part of any entrepreneurial experience, that's something else. And the truth is, we now live in a knowledge and information saturated world where just having knowledge and information, which at one time separated you, you know, yeah. was a tremendous asset. But now the point is, if you can't do something with that knowledge and information, if you can't apply it in a way that adds value to people's lives, improve a product or a service, or helps them find meaning in life, so what, right?
Yeah.
So your project, you know, certainly is a good example of initiative. Trust building, okay? You didn't know these people in yeah. India that you were going to be working with, and these doctors are over there saying, I got some 16-year-old kid in the United States who wants to work with us on some, you know, computer app project. You know, who is this guy? I don't know. Okay, so the point is, right, you had to present yeah. yourself, right? And you had to capture their trust. And to some extent, this is a customization process where, you know, you've got a product in a sense that can be helpful in a variety of situations, but you're focusing on developing nations, mm-hmm. okay? And so you didn't just say, okay, of all the possible maladies that are out there in the world, yeah. you know, let's just throw darts and pick two. You said, what are the two most serious problems in rural India mm-hmm. in terms of healthcare? So it's a customized product in that sense as well. I'm sure there are other ways in which your project fits that kind of world that I was describing earlier, but I think it's really just a classic example of the way in which more and more of the world's work is getting done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So would it be fair to say that you're proud of your efforts and that you and others involved in the project have made? I assume you are.
Yeah, I think I definitely am proud. But I think more than myself, I'm proud that I have such a great support system that can help me get through and get through all the hurdles and work through the challenges and basically help me in whatever ways I need. It all starts from my school, my teachers, who gave me the knowledge and what was necessary to take this, to actually be able to come up with such an idea and think that I could actually do this. Then to all my mentors at Launchbox, Mike, my parents, mm-hmm. you know, it's a really a collaborative effort. And then, of course, everyone in India who's actually on the ground doing great work all the time.
Getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah,
and it, trying to help people, yes. Yeah, I've been to some hospitals in India, yeah. and they're not all like the Apollo Hospital, yeah. you know, in Delhi. That's for sure. It's just amazing. They're almost like MASH units in the military. Yeah, in a lot of cases. Well, I think you have good reason to be proud. What have you learned so far from this project? I mean, how is Ahriman a different person, or is he a different person in some way because of this project?
Yeah, I think I definitely learned a few different things. I learned some things about myself. I learned that I'm an idealist at heart, but I can't always commit. And this project has really taught me that you have to be able to take that idea and take it to a reality.
Yeah.
And it's great to be an idealist sometimes, but you also have to be able to then buckle down and be the realist and get things done. And this project has really taught me how to do that. And then as just some more basic skills, it's taught me how to manage people and how to manage time. I never thought that I would
yes.
have to hire people or hold interviews or work with people across language barriers and have to have a translator and all these other things that you never would think of. And this project has really taught me a lot about the world that works around me and how the real world actually functions.
Yeah, exactly. I'm delighted to hear you say that.
What do your classmates say to you, or how do you, you know, communicate your passion and this to them? You know, you must be a leader and an inspiration on your campus. How does that work?
I think especially a lot of my classmates definitely are impressed by this kind of work, and I think it's helped people realize that you don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to be a Harvard graduate to be able to make a difference in the world. All you really need is to have a passion, and you just have to be able to find people to work with you on it. And I think that's been one of the greatest parts of this entire experience, to be able to share with other people that you don't have to have all this stuff that people think you need, like a degree or a lot of money. You just have to have a passion, really, and that's what it comes down to.
Martin Luther King Jr. was once asked by a young man, "I want to be great. How can I achieve greatness?" And Dr. King said, "It's simple. Anyone can be great. Because anyone can serve other people."
Mm-hmm.
That's what human greatness is.
Yeah.
Okay, serving other people. So you've learned something about international activity as well as yourself. About collaboration, project-based learning, in a sense.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a project that you assigned to yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, instead of a teacher assigning. Yeah. But you were working with other people, and all of a sudden you realize, hey, I'm responsible to these other people, and they're responsible to me. And, gee, I wasn't, you know, I hadn't planned on this, but this is a hugely important set of skills that you've had to try to master in this process. The other thing too is thinking of your partners in India. There's a long, sad experience, a long, sad history of people from Western nations saying, "Oh yes, we're going to come and help you solve your problems," and then kind of fading away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think one of the things that a project like this makes you realize is, hey, we've started this. We're dealing with other people's lives. This is not something you can just put down and pick up when you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to do it, you've got to
see it all the way through.
You've got to see it all the way through. So has it whetted your appetite for more entrepreneurial ventures?
Yeah, I think it definitely has. Once you go entrepreneurship, I don't think you can ever go back. I'm actually working right now on a different thing, another project regarding education and how to make student work more accessible and more meaningful, so to increase intrinsic motivation. And I think once you've seen how all these different parts of this machine that is entrepreneurship work together, it's like a hook. You always want to be doing more and seeing how you can help more people. And I think it's a great thing that entrepreneurship allows you to do is you don't have to do everything yourself ever. There's always you always work with others to see how can you make the most difference and the most change.
Just digress for a moment. Some listeners may be saying, entrepreneurship, this is a nice project, but what does it have to do with entrepreneurship? A lot of people think of entrepreneurship as necessarily being for-profit activity. And entrepreneurs are people who start new organizations, or they start new projects, or they get an idea and they exercise initiative to try to make something happen, to try to change the world in some fashion. Entrepreneurship applies to the nonprofit sector of our economy just as much as it applies to the for-profit sector of the economy.
Yeah, I think it's all about how you define profit to a lot of businesses.
Yes, very well. Okay.
Profit is all about how much money you can make, but you know, for me, profit is a lot more about how many people can you help? How many lives can you touch? And, you know, everyone, you're always trying to maximize profit. It's just how you define what your profit is.
I could not agree with you more. I think that's absolutely beautiful way to put it. Mike, any observations on his project? I think you mentioned before what Launchbox is trying to do to attract other high school students and younger people to participate. But any thoughts on...
I think Ari Amman's project and he personally has, you know, very early on become, you know, like the heart of Launchbox in so many ways, you know, because it exactly what President Barron was trying to do. You know, we're bringing in the young people with Lehigh Valley Launchbox. And in my view, the earlier we get them on this way of thinking, and the way the schools get on thinking, the better off we're going to be. But he's our advisory board. When he came in and gave the presentation after his trip to India, they were just in awe. You know, their mouths just dropped, and it's like, how does this guy do all these things? And his vocabulary and his, as you can tell by his speaking and his cogent thinking, he's just the real deal on all this.
Okay, I've got to stop this because we're going to give him a swelled head.
No, we're not. But you know, but that serves as an inspiration. And I think what we're now looking at in our strategic plan for Launchbox in the next year is we're going to try and do some monthly seminars for high school students to engage them in this entrepreneurial mindset.
Sounds like a great idea. We're going to take another short break. I'm talking with Professor Mike Kreise of Penn State University and with Ariman Khandelwal, a rising senior student at Parkland School District, Parkland High School. I'm Galen Godby, and this is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
What kind of beer do you love? IPAs, stouts, wheat beer, Belgian-style ales, American amber ales? We've got all of these and more at WDIY's second annual Homebrew Fest. Support WDIY and join us at the Ice House in Bethlehem, Saturday, July 8th from 2 to 5 p.m. Get your Homebrew Fest tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host for this evening, talking to Professor Mike Kreise of Penn State Lehigh Valley and Mr. Ariman Khandelwal, who will be a senior at Parkland High School starting in August. You guys start in August, I assume. Okay. And we're talking about innovation, entrepreneurship, and education. I think it's important. I think an important point about what Ariman is doing is that it shows us that young people can start nonprofit projects or organizations or businesses. We touched on this earlier, but I think it bears repeating. You don't have to wait to get a college degree. In fact, you don't need to get even a high school diploma. And so this is a really important point. We need to shift the kinds of values and knowledge, skills, experiences, attitudes that young people grow up with if they're going to do well in a world in which innovation, entrepreneurship plays, I think, a greater role. And so, Ariman, you actually did this project. Did you do the project at school, or did you do it at home, or a combination of the two?
The project itself was mostly done at home, but I used a lot of the concepts we've learned in school to inspire the project and work it through. Okay. But it was mostly something that was done at home.
Okay. And did you see this as an extension of other things you're doing in school? I guess in a way you answered that question, yeah. Whereas something wholly apart from school. So this was, in effect, your initiative, your project, but you in the process, you were using concept ideas, things mm-hmm. that you had learned in school. Okay. Is it fair to say that this project and the opportunities that Launchbox has created for you has affected your thinking about the kind of education that we need in this country?
I think it definitely has. Launchbox and Get to Greater have both shown me that there exists a world apart from what you learn in school. And there's a lot of ways to apply what we learn in school to the broader world to actually make a difference in the real world. And I think that aspect of education sometimes gets lost when you have to focus so much on standardized testing and learning information that you forget that information also has to be applied. And learning how to apply that information is just as important as learning the information itself.
Yeah. There's very little correlation between national results on the PISA exam. PISA, P-I-S-A, is an exam that about 70 countries use to measure student achievement in high schools. The U.S. is always somewhere in the middle of the pack there. But there's very little correlation between how nations fare mm-hmm. on the PISA exam and the degree to which they are supporting, supportive of, and friendly to innovation, entrepreneurship, in their country as a whole. So, in other words, it's quite possible to be mediocre. Not that you want to be mediocre, but it's quite possible to be mediocre in your academic skills, and yet be highly successful with innovation and entrepreneurship. Because innovation and entrepreneurship is a whole lot more than just those traditional academic skills. I have to be careful when I talk about that because sometimes I give people the impression that I don't think that academic skills matter. And I assure you, as a professor at Moravian College, I really do. But successful innovation and entrepreneurship is a whole lot more mm-hmm. than those traditional academic skills, I guess is just the best way to put it. So let me throw this to Mike as well as Ariman. What changes might you make in the way that we organize educational opportunities and experiences for young people in our country as we enter what is shaping up as a volatile, increasingly unpredictable future? Many critics have argued that our schools were largely modeled on 20th century mass production techniques, saying that we should be moving to mass customization models for the future in education. What do you guys think?
I couldn't agree more with you. In my strategy and leadership courses, I have my students do a 20 to 30 hour nonprofit leadership process where they go out and pick a nonprofit of their choosing, go in and do a strategy diagnostic with them. Do they have the right people? What are their needs? And after a conversation with their executive directors, they have to come up with a project that they can do to help them. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, half of them have never associated themselves with any nonprofit of any kind. So this is their first year experience about that. And at the end of it, in the beginning, they're saying, I don't know what to do or what to do. I says, well, that's
the whole point. That's the whole point.
It's a vague thing. Go out and make mm-hmm. something happen there. And they amaze me every time with what they finally do, and they get tremendous satisfaction. And better than 60% of them in their final paper back to me on that say they're going to continue working with them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot that we need to do as teachers is to engage them in real-world experiences and kind of prime the pump for them. And I think those types of projects prime the pump, that it's still related to you know, the part of the academic experience that they're getting, but they also have that experiential part.
And I want to take this moment to publicly acknowledge you, because I stole that idea from you, and I use it in a couple of my different courses that I teach at Moravian College. And it is, it's a great exercise for these people, you know, to go out and just confront the situation as they find it.
Well, no need to steal it, Galen. Just put it out there and let everybody start doing
My doctoral dissertation advisor, the first thing that he said, first words out of his mouth were, steal from the best. So that's what I've done in this case.
Thank you.
Ahriman, how about your thoughts?
Yeah, I think colleges and universities really have taken this kind of customization model really to the next level. And I think it's important that we also scale this back to the high school level as well. And the way that works is focusing on application in addition to just theory. So there's a lot of theoretical concepts that you learn in every subject, math, science, history. And the way high schools also have to remember that this theory needs to be applied in the future, and students can't learn how to apply those theory concepts themselves. It's very difficult. And so there also, I think, in the high school level also has to be that application portion, which I think high schools do very well in with their club system or having activities, extracurriculars. And I think just drawing that connection between what happens in school and what happens outside of school just can be a little bit stronger.
I think the reference to club activities and extracurricular activities is really important in thinking about how we improve our educational experiences and processes in both K-12 and higher ed. What I've observed over the years is that students put so many students put so much effort into the clubs and the extracurricular activities because they have a greater sense of ownership.
Yeah.
Psychological ownership of those activities and projects that the clubs are about.
Yeah.
And I don't think that our system is very good at developing a sense of ownership for the acquisition of traditional academic skills and things that happen in the classroom.
Yeah.
And I think that's the fundamental challenge, really, for us in education right now. We have some ideas about motivation, you know, and some ways of organizing ourselves that are just not striking the right chords with young people. And I think that's something that we're going to have to really think very hard about. One of the books that I use in my courses is Daniel Pink's book, actually a couple of his books, A Whole New Mind, and the other one called Drive, which is about the power of intrinsic motivation as opposed to extrinsic, externally applied rewards and punishments, you know, carrots and sticks and that sort of thing. And in the case of the extracurricular activities, the students are supplying their own motivation. Okay. In the classroom, it's do this. If you do this, if you jump through this hoop, then you will be complying with my sense of what's important, and then I will give you, you know, a pat on the head in the form of an A. They don't own it. You know, we make it clear that we own it. And I think until they own it, we're going to have a lot of inefficiency, shall we say, in the learning process. Many futurists believe that people will work fewer hours at paid jobs in the future, let's say over the next 20 years. Given the way in which automation and algorithms and robots could evaporate jobs at all levels of sophistication, not just, you know, semi-skilled labor jobs. No, no, this is a process that I'm convinced is going to affect all kinds of work virtually. So 15, 20 years from now, many of us may be leading leisure-centric lives, or at least lives that have much more discretionary time. So if people are helped to develop entrepreneurial skills and attitudes from childhood on, if they're taught to take action on ideas that could improve people's lives, isn't it possible that entrepreneurship may be the best way to ensure a satisfying future? That is a future that incorporates leisure, play, and the spirit of service into the organizations or the products or services that that one creates. I guess what I'm suggesting is that we may need to educate people for leisure as well as for entrepreneurship, because of the availability of larger blocks of unstructured time, which is an ideal setting for creativity and entrepreneurship, could be a huge spur to innovation and the formation of new organizations and services. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, as we baby boomers begin to age and retire and do have more time and leisure time and also have resources, that I think it's important that we begin to build bridges with the younger generations as early on in the forms of mentorship and involving more or less the older generation getting engaged with ideas and helping them, high school students, and even elementary school students begin to think differently, okay? And part of it, just like Ari Aman recognized this need in India when he was there and talking to him, you know, we're going to have new needs and new opportunities. I mean, just look at the advances of in mobility that people with some sort of infirmity, you know, from a traditional wheelchair to motorized wheelchairs to being able to get in a car with a wheelchair and driving around or on a motor scooter to exoskeleton.
Yes.
This is all the types of things that, you know, someone like Ari Aman, if one of his family members, God forbid, became infirm, you know, with his type of passion, you know, he's going to start looking for a solution for him. Mm-hmm. Am I right, Ari?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I think that kind of works with the fact that there is going to, in the future, be a new definition to what we call leisure. And I think leisure will be a time for us to work on our own projects, like you were mentioning, that leisure won't be a time for us to just delve into mass consumption and mass entertainment. It'll be a time where we have some unstructured time where we're going to take our own passions and, you know, make them a reality. And I think that's what leisure will hopefully become in the future.
Yeah.
Because we'll have less work to do in structured time, that this additional time we'll have, we'll be able to use for productive means to better society how we think is best fit.
Yeah, there have been a lot of studies on both the health effects and psychological effects of being fired or laid off or having your job disintegrate on you know, different groups of workers. Several of those studies have found that a lot of those people were simply not prepared for large blocks of unstructured leisure time. And that consequently, what a lot of these folks do is watch TV and sleep more.
Yeah.
They sleep more and they watch more TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, we've never had an educational system that tried to say to people, you're responsible for developing your own plan for your own time. Mm-hmm. Okay, how could you use time? What do you need to do to use time in a way that will help you develop yourself, not just financially, okay, but, you know, spiritually, physically, psychologically, yeah, socially, in all these different ways? In other words, we've never thought about education for leisure, okay, because it wasn't a real possibility for a lot of people. We may have a lot of leisure enforced upon us because of artificial intelligence, robotics, algorithms, and the way in which they evaporate jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to look at this whole question of what we sometimes call work-life balance and so on. But we all need the possibility of being able to start something. And I can't imagine in principle that a robot or an algorithm, as amazingly sophisticated as some of these technologies are becoming, I can't imagine that they could ever have an idea and bring a group of people together around that idea and say, let's go, let's do this, okay? So I just think that's a hugely important thing for the future. So, Mike, you know, as you are a distinguished educator, and I know you won the Atherton Teaching Award for the entire Penn State system a couple of years ago, and before that you were International Business Professor of the Year that one of the international business accrediting agencies gave you that award. So how do you try to prepare students for jobs that haven't even been invented yet and for the accelerating pace of change in climate, lifestyle, demography, and markets? What knowledge, skills, attitudes, and experiences are you emphasizing in your courses and in the extracurriculum at Penn State Lehigh Valley?
Well, at Penn State, we have 9 majors that can be completed there and just around 1,000 students. But I run the business society, and I mentor that. And we start with freshmen right away. They come in. And
what is the Business Society?
The Business Society is just a club that the students run. We go to Wall Street. We go to the UN. Mm-hmm. We do other activities. We bring in speakers. But when the freshman class comes in August, we get them together. We enlist them, and we start getting them with a LinkedIn, a resume. We take professional photos, and we take them 3 weeks later up to University Park to the Bryce Jordan Center, where there's over 1,000 employers there who want to hire Penn State graduates. And the chances of these freshmen getting an internship, although one did get it this past year, is not that so high on the radar. But I want them to see their future. Okay, and I want them to stand in line with PwC, Ernst & Young, GE Medical, and listen to the conversations that the juniors and seniors and sophomores are having for internships and jobs.
Yes.
And let them see from their peers that are 1 or 2 years older the skill sets that they need to develop not only academically but communication skills, leadership skills, presentation skills. And when they come back on the bus and they're mixed with some juniors and seniors who are getting calls for jobs and internships offers right away, you can see their excitement go. So now they see the end game, okay? And I think that's an important part for our freshmen to do. So that's one of the most rewarding things I do early on. And then from that point on, they begin to develop their own personalities and professional skills.
So we're coming toward the end of our time together. Let me just invite each of you to maybe have a parting thought or either summary thought or a parting thought for our discussion today. I have the feeling we could go on for quite a while. This has really, really been lively and good. Ariman, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just have some like basic points for anyone who's looking to do something like this. Just some basic things to remember. One thing we've talked about a lot here is to go multidisciplinary. And that's one thing that's definitely going to be important in the future throughout. Another thing to always ask. There's always help out there for anyone who's willing to ask for it. And sometimes all you have to do is ask. And then that allows you to work together, which is my next point. Everything is going to be collaboration-based in the future, and that means working together.
That's all of the action is across boundaries.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mike, in closing?
I would just talk to young high school students and their parents, you know, get an opportunity to shadow somebody. If you're a freshman or sophomore in high school and you're thinking about a medical profession, go shadow a doctor. Go shadow a nurse. Go shadow an engineer. You know, use the networks of your parents and your friends at school and ask, your dad's an engineer. Can I go shadow him for a day? You know, and start out that way. Simple steps. So see what piques your curiosity.
I think that's terrific advice. We've come to the end of our hour. I want to thank Professor Mike Kreiza, Penn State Lehigh Valley Business Department. I want to thank Ariman Khandelwal, extraordinary young man who will be a senior at Parkland High School, for their thoughts and energy today. Again, we've been talking about education and entrepreneurship in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Thank you very much for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.